So here we are at the end of the episode. I can't believe it's come to this. How did we get here? I just wanted to do a podcast with my good friend Ben, and yet somehow I've ended up in this predicament. I've got to think back. Back to the beginning, when it all started. I'd just driven into the city from my apartment. I was sitting in the studio in front of the microphone when the theme music started playing. Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the deadly, treacherous, clinically psychotic world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
This week we're taking a look at Season 9, Episode 4, Rest in Peace, Mrs. Columbo. This episode stars Helen Shaver as a real estate agent who murders her boss as part of a plot to enact murderous revenge on Columbo for arresting her husband many years ago. Shaver has appeared in many projects, but has been just as prolific behind the camera, directing episodes of Law & Order SVU, Orphan Black, Westworld, and the upcoming Snowpiercer series. This episode also features legendary actor Ian McShane as the murderer's lover. McShane starred as the charming antiques dealer Lovejoy on the series Lovejoy, and as the extremely sweary Al Swearingen on Deadwood. This episode also features Edward Winter, who I recall fondly as the intelligence officer's Colonel Samuel Flagg on MASH. Yeah. This episode marks the return of Columbo scribe and murderer she wrote co-creator Peter S. Fisher as the writer and features director Vincent McAvity, who directed the episode of Star Trek where they all go to the Nazi planet, the episode of Star Trek where they go to the OK Corral, and that one episode of the Star Trek where they go to like a planet and it's like, it's kind of like Earth, but there was like a nuclear war, and there's like the Yangs and the Cons, and it's like the Yankees and the
Do you get the reference?
Do you get it?
I don't get it. I think he needed to make it more obvious.
It's maybe the most obvious episode of television ever. This, I have to say, I came into this episode ready to not like it very much because I remember like having watched it and not paid a lot of attention to it, not really enjoying it. But I was not giving this episode enough credit. It is fun and weird and enjoyable. It is not, I don't think it's good in the way that that last week's was, but I think this is actually a pretty darn good episode of Columbo, truth be told.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, when I initially, like, once I got over the sort of, you know, the
conceit
that they were doing with the kind of like,
so it all starts at the
internal monologue.
It all starts at Columbo, the funeral we learn for Mrs. Columbo. Mrs. Columbo is dead. She's already dead. It's the beginning of the episode. She's already died. And it's real and it really happened. And it's permanent. And so we start at the beginning of the episode with the most bored the most bored preacher in the world. But yeah, like you were saying, yeah, once you
get
over
that. Yeah, we get to hear
him
fucking talk so much more than I wanted to.
I
want to
play a little bit of it, like just kind of maybe going into the monologue because of just how like how disinterested this guy is and like eulogizing and Columbo standing there like fake pretending to grieve. I mean, really grieving. This is a real thing that's actually happened and will not be reversed.
Yeah, it's totally a real thing and not a twist in the late stage. Anyway.
Yeah, but I want to play a little bit of this because it's just wonderful how, it's just like, I don't know if Columbo is supposed to tip this guy and he didn't and he's just like giving him like the worst, or is he in on it? Is that why he's supposed
to? I mean, that's the thing, right? Is it's like, it's probably not even a priest. Like, that's probably like the line cook from the chili parlor.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. This is Rolf or whatever it is. I can't remember. I didn't take a note of that part. But yeah, let's hear a little bit of this priest's touching sermon.
All right.
Our sister was washed clean in baptism and anointed with the oil of salvation. give her fellowship with all the saints.
Why did you cry? Damn it. I cried.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think that's why.
Don't you understand? Hasn't it hit you yet? Your precious wife is gone for good, dead.
Oh.
And gone. Gone
for good, dead.
And oh, how I've waited and prayed for this moment.
Ah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of
there's so much
this
in that
internal dialogue at this funeral.
And the internal dialogue, like, yeah, I guess maybe that's why everybody is having an internal monologue, is because this guy is just fucking droning. But yeah, no, I mean, after I sort of got over the initial, like, sort of presentation of the thing, I really got into this episode.
Yeah,
like,
it's fun.
Not only is Helen, like, she really just, I mean, she takes the big swing at this, and she really does a great job. Like, she just puts everything into this character and does everything she can with
I
the script that she's got.
I definitely feel like choices were made after the thing was written. Like, it's not in the script that she sits on a couch and rubs her face with the tail of a stuffed cat. That's not in the script. That's a decision that she made as an actor.
Well, but I mean, when you know? The script says, hey, you're going to be half naked in your lingerie on your couch watching an automated slideshow of your dead husband.
Right.
You know, while you're drinking, then, like, makes sense to me that if that's what they give you to work with, you do as much with it as you fucking can.
And she did, and no one stopped her, and it happened. Look, it happened. It's
creepy and intense and weird, and I'm pretty sure that was the whole point.
Yeah,
and so to that end,
it's also a little goofy. Let's be honest.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's no. Goofy. I mean, there is totally a level of, like, goofiness with it, but also network TV and like, let's be real. Like, if it were like a modern, you know, this thing is on, I don't know, CBS All Access, or, well, it wouldn't be on Disney Plus, but you know what I mean.
Sure.
If it were on one of those services, like,
I would love it.
There would be
Disney
a lot worse than just brushing her face with the tail of a stuffed cat.
Sure.
Like, they would absolutely push that into the, like, creepy sort of.
It was very difficult for me to focus on the creepiness of that scene because I spent, like, the first half of it going, "What is that? Is that a cat? What is it?" Because she just is like, she's just, all you see is the tail of it. You see, like, a little bit of it when she gets up off the couch. But for like the first minute and a half, it's just this woman on a couch sort of kissing and gently caressing the tail of this stuffed cat, which presumably has some significance to her husband who passed away in prison.
I don't know. That part's not really explained.
That is not explained. Yeah.
I just, after the initial sort of like, okay, please, like, I get the gist of this scene, but please don't actually, like, mime like you're touching yourself. And she didn't do that, so I was relieved.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of, you know, the level of, like, that's the vibe that it gives off, like I said.
But, oh, yeah.
But anyway.
Absolutely.
But,
like,
yeah, I mean,
in a modern context, this would absolutely be a masturbation scene. And she does, like, stand up and then, like, stand in the path of the slide projector so that his face is projected
on her. Right.
And then she, like, sort of, like, does a little rhythmic dance and then cries.
Yeah, and then, like, collapses into, you know, like, the fetal position sobbing. And, like, and it's one of those things where, like...
Yeah, it's not subtle at
No. I don't think this is really a subtle episode on those fronts at all. But honestly, once I stopped stumbling over it, I did really enjoy it. And I thought that it was... a nice way to kind of take another look at the Columbo formula.
Sure. Yeah.
And how to kind of play with that. I mean, I also, in fairness, in my notes, there were points where I was like, all right, this is really starting to become like an Ocean's 11.
It also, like, really overstays its welcome. The funeral, scenes definitely at a certain point, it's just like, okay. You did it.
Yeah.
You can move on.
We don't need to go back to the funeral as we go into this person's remembrance of a scene with Columbo.
Anytime it went to commercial, when it came back, they were at the funeral. And then right. like, you would get the secretary would say, he seemed like such a nice man when I met him. And then it would flash back to Columbo coming into the murder scene. And then, you know, yep. Ian McShane going, this guy really sucks. And then
yeah. flashbacks. He's like, fuck this guy. Yeah. My wife is, you know, going to leave me because of all this bullshit. Also, why did he invite me to this funeral?
I also love him saying, like, I don't even know why I'm here. And I'm like, yeah, you definitely shouldn't be. You shouldn't be at this funeral of this woman you don't know, along with your mistress and your wife, buddy. Get yep. out of there. You're not required to be there by law. Go home.
You could say no.
What are you doing?
Yeah. It's very... very silly,
but so it's a silly part of the premise. Like, it right. doesn't really make sense that all of the people involved in the case are there. Like, I don't know right. why the secretary would be there. She has two scenes maximum, and she's not particularly involved in either of them.
Right. She's mostly there to find her boss's corpse.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that the concept of having a killer who is out for revenge because of, you know, basically blaming Columbo for her husband
that's
dying in
great.
Prison.
Like, I really
it was a really good concept.
Yeah, I love it. I really like the idea of, like, you know, it's something that we've seen maybe once or twice. The person actually tries to, like, attack Columbo or you know, like one time, you know, one of the woman who killed her sister, like, turned the gun on, or he killed her brother. She turned the gun on Columbo, and Columbo was like, you're too classy a lady to murder a policeman. And she was like, oh, Columbo,
yep.
I won't murder you. But yep.
like, you know what? I changed my mind. Yeah. I like you enough to not shoot you.
Other than her and I think the psychiatrist, right? That's the only other one. Is the dog?
I think so.
I think that otherwise it's just been people like, just being like, well, you got me. All right. You're a very small, not particularly physically fit man. I guess, you know, nothing for me to do but go with you. I know you don't have a gun. You famously don't carry one. I could just run away, but I guess not.
Right. It's very silly. And that does remind me, like, that it's true. I feel like the end of the episode drags a little, especially after the catch. Like, it's a little charming, but no, it's also like,
I like getting a little this whole episode is about Mrs. Columbo. So having this sort of closing it out with a longish Mrs. Columbo bit, I don't really mind that. I think, you know, given the subject matter, it's okay to indulge yourself a little bit. I would say, as far as does Mrs. Columbo exist, yes or no, this episode is probably the second strongest after the after the cruise ship, where she physically appears and is seen by other people. This would be the second
other
strongest.
Humans confirm the existence of Mrs. Columbo.
They point to her off camera as being somewhere. I would say this is the this is the closest we've been to. We think maybe for a moment that we've seen a picture of Mrs. Columbo. It turns out to be a picture of her sister.
Sister, yes, which is a really amazing thing. Right. I love that they put that detail in to be like, no, and also fuck you guys. That's not Mrs. Columbo. We're also not going to just give you a picture.
That's got to be a much younger sister than Mrs. Columbo, because that woman was like in her late 30s, and
I don't think Columbo's wife was, you know, a teenager when he first showed up on this show.
Peter Falk's wife was much younger, but Mrs. Columbo, I think, is meant to be roughly of an equivalent age to Columbo.
Yeah, they're presented more as that sort of...
Yeah, an old married couple kind of thing. I mean, they were an old married couple back when he wasn't that old.
Right, and it's like... What does he say, like 28 or 29 years
something
at this point?
Something like that,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he says 28 or 29. I know it's not 30. I would remember if it was 30.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is fair. I would be worried, my dude, if you didn't remember that it's been 30 years.
Yeah, we also something to add to the Mrs. Columbo file, we also learned that she is bad at gardening. She has what Columbo refers to as a dead thumb instead of a green thumb.
Yeah, I thought it was black thumb, but hey, dead thumb, I guess.
No, he definitely, well, I mean, it might be black thumb in the rest of the world, but Columbo's got his own thing going on.
Well, that's very true. We've seen that so many times. Do you want to talk about the sort of basics of the plot?
Yeah.
I guess we could. Yeah. we don't have to.
No,
it's
that's
fine.
I mean, we sort of dance around it, but I could just, why don't we just say them so that, you know, if people haven't watched the episode, which they should, this is a good one. Go ahead and find a copy online. They're out there. Just look around.
It's popping up more as available on streaming services, which is kind of nice to see.
I think now that the lawsuit is resolved that we may see it actually popping up on streaming. So,
yeah, I've definitely seen some of it show up on streaming services. I want to say maybe a couple of seasons on Amazon Prime streaming or something.
Fantastic.
I don't know.
Please.
But it might be that they're for purchase.
They're definitely there for purchase.
Discs,
I don't know that they're there for just streaming without purchase.
Right.
Like on Prime. This episode starts at the funeral. We learned that this woman, I don't have the IMDb open.
It's
Ben. Vivian Dimitri.
Right. Who's played by, I always have to look over for some reason, and that's terrible. Helen Shaver.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Vivian Dimitri, her husband,
Pete,
was sent away to prison so that by Columbo, he had embezzled some money from a client.
So I know this one. The breakdown is he kind of worked in the stock market and kind of stockbroker stuff.
Yes.
And so the market, like, tanked, which I assume, you know, given when this was made, that's a reference to,
I don't think he was a stockbroker. I think he was a real estate person, like the murder victim.
When she talked about it,
he worked for,
like, a broker.
No, I think what it is that he worked for them, or they worked together. Maybe I'm wrong, and please feel free to correct me in the comments. But I believe what happened was that he stole money from a client to cover his stock loss, his personal stock losses, not company stock losses.
I mean, that's correct. He also was working for someone, and then he got ratted out that he was embezzling from clients, panicked and murdered the client that he had taken money from.
Yes. That's right.
And then Columbo caught him.
Yeah.
And so that's
Columbo
why he
even
went to prison.
Columbo says later, like, it seemed like he was a nice guy. He was not a terrible guy. He just got himself into a bad situation, felt like he had no other option, and the judge saw it the same way.
Right.
That's why he got a reduced sentence.
So
he got this guy got 20 years, but he only made it 12 before he had a heart attack and died. Vivian.
And that happened like a year ago. When he had a heart attack and died, she apparently, I don't know, from the way that she talks about it, because she mentions like rubber room, and there's suggestions that like she was in a psych ward.
Right. She was under the care of a doctor in San Francisco, which is where he was in prison. And she was under the care of a doctor and... Dr. Stedman, played by Roscoe Lee Brown, character actor. Great. He's great.
He's a great cameo in this.
He's a great cameo. Fantastic voice. Amazing voice. I'm going to play a little clip of it later because I don't think I could get by without a little bit of Roscoe Lee Brown in it. He's fantastic in this. But she was under the care of this psychologist, and she did not take it well. She gets a call from him. She has a message on her machine that's saying, this is the doctor. You really should be seeing someone there to deal with your grief. I can, you know, refer you to someone. So it's clear that she's not processing this in a healthy way. I would say it's safe to say that.
You think the fact that she, you know, goes to like work for the guy who ratted out her husband, who was also secretly into her and making advances on her, and going to work for him for like, what was it, like the better part of a year before she turned around and murders his ass? Like,
uh-huh.
Yeah. She clearly, yeah. I don't think that's.
I think that's healthy. I think
handling
that's,
grief well.
No, I think that's all part of the normal stages of grief. It's like, you know, denial. There's was Dabda denial,
bargaining, acceptance, bargaining, murder,
working for your husband's betrayer for a year. That's all in there.
Right. Yeah, that's all pretty standard.
Yeah, pretty standard stuff. Then so she gets a big sale. She sells off a nice. An 8-room mansion to some Texas folk.
For $5.7 million.
And she gets a $250,000 commission check, which is pretty good.
Was that the commission check, or was that like their deposit?
No, that was
escrow?
That was her commission. Yeah, was $250,000.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Not bad. Yeah. And so she. Goes back. She calls up the office. She calls Ed Winter, who is the betrayer, but also he's the person.
Yeah, Charlie or Charlton.
Yeah, Charlton Chambers. And she that's
sorry.
His name.
It's such a good name.
And then she says, "Hey, could you stay late so that we can get this buttoned up? I can get my check, you know, and you know, we'll do that." And he's like, "Hey, it's it's Friday. This place closes out at Friday." And then he says my favorite line in the entire episode, which is, "Don't you know there's a game at the sports arena?" Which is like so close to just saying like, "Hey, sports ball, folks."
Yeah.
Right? I love sports.
Hey. I know you want to meet and do this business thing, but I have the sport times happening. Yeah, it's so generic. It's like, it's LA. I mean, you could just, it's okay. You can pick something that's local.
Yeah, I don't know that I mean, legally, we might be getting to the point where you have to pay, you know, somewhere if you say
for
the
their name.
Name.
Yeah,
the
that's
place.
Fair.
So,
I mean, it's silly, but
it is silly,
I know
that,
what you mean.
That,
yeah.
that is a thing. And so, yeah, she says, well, stay late. And then she comes in, she murders him. She gives him a little, very practiced speech about, you know, it was so sad when he went away. But then not everyone was sad, were they? Some of us, some of us knew more about it than maybe we let, like that kind of speech.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's definitely the like, oh, you've really been thinking about this for a while. I mean, especially down to the fact that she asks for a rum and coke, which is a different drink than she normally drinks.
Well, when she goes
and it's
to the
related to an anniversary thing, is kind of how she talks about it.
Yeah, and so she goes, she murders him, goes off to meet Ian McShane for a little late night rendezvous. She
But she takes his wallet
takes his
so
wallet.
That she can then
she withdraws some money. So it looks like he. She kind of basically said, now this is where this episode sort of follows, is similar to the Columbo Cries Wolf. Because here we have a murder victim sort of setting, or a murderer setting this fake trail. She's intentionally making a bad trail that Columbo will work through. Which is interesting. because I feel like there, like when we get to the, well, actually here, let me play this clip because I feel like this clip is sort of the key to the entire episode and that part of the plot. And this is Roscoe Lee Brown as the doctor explaining something to Columbo. And I think this kind of gives you the whole thing.
Yeah. Hey, Lieutenant, the woman you described from that case history you found in that book, if she did exact her revenge, she would have to make sure her victim knew that she was responsible. Otherwise, where's the satisfaction? Do you follow me?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, I follow you perfectly.
Yeah. So I think that what he's basically saying is that it is part of her. It's part of her thing that she wants him to know, because I think she doesn't care that she'll get caught. So part of it is getting him close through being so guilty, because she knows from her previous experience that he gets close to the people he's trying to catch, right? He gets in there, he shares, he gets personal, and she's trying to draw him in by leading this she's trying to draw him in by reading, and you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, right. And I think, I definitely think there's some truth to that. You know, I don't think every sort of misstep she makes is 100% intentional. But I will say, I think she is mostly done in by the fact that he is thorough and goes back and reviews stuff because he obviously recognized her.
Right.
And then he just kind of plays dumb to just how much he's aware of.
Right.
And we get to see that because Columbo lays all that shit out for the doofy younger sergeant who is his kind of second in this episode. Sergeant Brady, you know, it kind of exists in a lot of
these scenes. Yes, this is he's very Watson-y. Like, he basically is a Watson in this episode. He's a little slow. He's a little, he's asked the very dumb questions that a very dumb audience member would ask.
Right. He's a bit of that, and so we get information through him, and Columbo sends him out to handle some things, and then Columbo also uses him to pretend like he is not on top of the sort of trap that Vivian is trying to set for him.
Yeah,
specifically because Vivian is trying to, has made an effort to attempt to frame rather clumsily, like Mr. Connolly. Basically, I wrote it down, but I think that's right.
Because it's so clumsy, and also there's the stuff where she's like, very, very obviously like saying, oh no, don't ask me about my secret affair, please.
Right.
I would love to keep this a secret.
I mean, that's the thing is that stuff didn't feel too out. I mean, it I don't know. Cause the very first time, I mean, the opening sequence for the episode at the funeral, like she even says as much that she wants him to know that she, you know, killed his wife, you know, before he dies. And that whole business, like, it's very clear that like, no, she wants to make sure that Columbo knows she did all the things before she offs him. And, you know, but I do think that she's thought a lot about her process and kind of how to frame this other guy and sort of, and understands that he will kind of chase everything down, but also
I don't think she wants to get away with it. That's my read of it, is that
I think that's true, but at the same time, I don't think that she,
I don't think she
left a huge opening. I think she left enough of one that there were questions and there were things that would drag along for Columbo while she tried to chum up with him, knowing that he is kind of all smiles towards
suspects. I think the thing that
suspects.
She didn't really count on, the only part that she like that he uncovers that she didn't really count on was that he would figure out how to get something from the doctor. I think she was sort of planning or she was sort of figuring on doctor patient confidentiality. Because I like, if you look at like her, the money. So part of the alibi is that the money that's in, the deceased's wallet was withdrawn from an ATM at 9:45, 9:15. It's not one of those. Long after the meeting between him and the murderer. And so, she makes the withdrawal from an ATM that's in the hotel she is having dinner at. So I think that, and that's all tracked, and they know that by the end of the episode. So I think, because she's so meticulous about planning it, that that sort of error says that not only does she want him to know that she murdered the Mrs. Columbo, but also that she did this other murder, and that through him investigating it, that's how she like drew him into the trap, basically.
Right. And the thing that she didn't account for that Columbo talks about with Brady is that he got several calls from his dentist's office, except his dentist moved out of town to somewhere else 4 months ago, and he never got another dentist, so no one should be calling him.
I got a clip.
Yeah.
Oh. Lieutenant?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just this tooth. I gotta have it looked at. Whenever I get anything cold on it. Oh, that's another thing. My dentist.
Sir?
Before my wife and I came back from the vacation, I got a couple of calls from my dentist assistant. They wanted to set up an appointment for me to come in and clean my teeth.
Yeah, my dentist does that all the time.
But you have a dentist, Mr. Brady. I don't have one. Mine moved to Florida 4 months ago. I never got a new one. So somebody, and I'm pretty sure it's Vivian Dimitri, was very anxious to know when I was going back to work. And now all I got.
And this is where is where he starts to think about the revenge.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the thing, the fact that she was trying to make sure that he would be around for this case is the part that tells him something is really up.
Yeah.
As far as her alibi goes, the thing that I will say is, I think you're right in that she used an ATM that she was close enough to, that she knew that it would draw some suspicion, but not break her alibi.
Right.
I think the part she didn't, I don't know. I didn't see anything that clued me into the fact that she was aware that Charlie had money from his bookie in his overcoat.
Right.
Because obviously he wasn't wearing that when she shot him. And so her excuse about him drawing money from the ATM.
Right. I don't think she
falls apart.
I don't think she plotted everything, but I think the parts.
No.
I think the parts that she did directly that were broken were intentional. And that and that there is this another, like the bookie thing is something that sort of gets Columbo on the trail, but it's not. Also, we should talk about this bookie.
Oh my God.
He fell out of the bookie scene. It's amazing. It's great.
It's just, well, just the fact that the guy is like, oh, we gave it the office.
This
like
is
when,
like a,
when Columbo says he's a cop and just the whole like, okay, I get it. It's a it's a shitty hotel where
this is a
sex workers bring clients and, you know,
this is a 100% David S. Fisher special right here. This is what he excels at, is writing these weirdo characters who come in for like one scene and they do a fun little thing, and Columbo interacts with them in a weird way. It's very much also, you know, what happens 90% of the time on Murder, She Wrote, you know.
That's true.
Peter
Fisher, not David Fisher.
David Fisher, yeah. Yeah. Peter.
Peter.
Peter S. Fisher, yes. Yeah. But this is very much his, this is his MO, like this sort of weird. Aren't these a bunch of colorful characters? We got in some weirdos from Central Casting to give.
Yeah.
Give some dialogue.
Well, because there's that scene, but there's also the chili parlor.
Right.
And while the chili parlor isn't like a bunch of weirdos all at once, it is this kind of marvelous, like random aside as Columbo, like as Brady is trying to talk to Columbo about business, and Columbo is like, oh, the chili recipe changed. What the hell happened? And then she breaks down how, you know, the previous guy like
South America somewhere.
Yeah.
Machu Picchu. He went to Machu Picchu.
Mazatlan, I think is what she said.
Okay. I've got Peru.
And then
the
new guy is like German or something.
Yes.
And Columbo makes some crack about you shouldn't let Germans make chili, or like it's so weird.
Oh, the well-known stereotype that we all know. And
of course.
Yes,
right.
Germans make lousy chili, as everyone knows. But yeah, it's another weird aside. And then they exit that and then go to, somehow they're on a dock. Like somehow the exit to this diner is the end of a dock, because they're like at the end
it's just
where boats dock.
Yeah, it's on the boardwalk, because that's of course, that's where he goes for his chili.
Yeah, it's great, and it's
super
just
weird.
A bunch of weird like scenes, but it's fun. It's a fun episode. But this bookie is like he fell out of the sting. He's just like wearing this like this incredibly loud tweed outfit. He's got this like little hat on. I don't know what kind of hat that is.
It's like a I don't remember,
like a little pork pie or something, a little fedora, yeah, kind of thing.
Well, and just yeah, the tiny little book and the fact that he's just like
he's
holed
like
up
running
in
and
the
out
one
of
the,
yeah,
phone booth. Yep. Yeah.
And then the and yeah, yeah, and the extremely oily manager,
yes,
of this pay by the hour hotel basically gives him up because he's tying up the phones all the time. It's very like early 90s like television humory kind of thing, and definitely, yep, made me think of Murder, She Wrote specifically. Like you could pull out Columbo and plunk down Miss Fletcher,
Jessica, yeah,
and it would not affect the scene at all. It would be exactly the same.
No, you're
much.
Right. It would be mostly the same. The only difference would be the facial expressions on the detective.
Right. You would just have to throw in like Gus, you know, the sheriff. So that she has some law enforcement behind her. But otherwise, you wouldn't have to change anything at all. It was wonderful, and I loved it. And that's when I sort of bought in and was like, all right, you know what? This episode's okay. Like there, we had some fun melodrama at the beginning, but then it's like, it's fun. It's a fun episode.
I like that that's the turn for you, that you were like, okay, yeah, I'm in.
I like weird, oily characters, and that's like but in a fun way. Like, it was these weird, like, creeps at this weird, creepy hotel, and I don't know, there's something about it. It's just very endearing to me. I can't explain it, and I won't explain it.
No, you don't have to.
But
it's great. And so like, I mean, outside of that, yeah, it's the usual kind of like trail following, et cetera. But like the whole time, Vivian is just uncomfortably pressing to like meet Mrs. Columbo, to have dinner with him, you know, because Columbo like gives her condolences over the loss of her husband, and they kind of talk about that a little bit, and he's clearly sympathetic and empathetic, right, and she is just like, rather than taking that at face value, it just to her, she just takes it as the opening to try and get the knife into his back and try to, you know, kill his wife, and eventually gives him poisoned marmalade, I think.
Yes, poisoned lemon marmalade made with lemons. And that's how she's going to deliver this drug. It's unnamed.
Right.
It's an unnamed drug. So that way they don't have to actually, you know, go to the trouble of finding
research.
One.
Yeah,
yeah, doing any research at all. But
yeah,
it's this
no,
drug.
It's fine. I'd rather they do that. It worked. It's also one of those things where as soon as she handed that over, I was like, he's a cop. Do
right.
you think he's not going to have this tested?
Yeah.
Like that was maybe the one point where I was like, oh, you've really gone beyond the pale because you.
Well, I mean, she wants to get caught. I mean, that's the thing. Like she doesn't
but
really care.
But after she's done the murdering, not before she did the murdering.
Right. Like, well, she doesn't know that he's on to her about the, you know, the revenge
right.
stuff at that point.
No, of course. But again, it's one of those like still
yeah.
a cop.
Yeah. You're dumb. You're dumb, lady. You're dumb, and you got caught, and that's what happened. So she gives him this lemon marmalade, and he takes it back, and they're having a conversation later, and in rushes Brady, and says,
yep.
"You got to come with me, detective. It's your wife. She's collapsed." And then
and I will point out that Brady does this while he's talking to Vivian, and this is after Columbo has done a play acting at Brady as Vivian is headed over to present as if they are really putting the screws to Mr. Connolly, who she was trying to frame.
Right. He's this Connolly is this angry homeowner who got screwed out of some deal by the company. That
right.
they work for.
Well, everybody in this development apparently got screwed by the real estate company, and they're all mad about it. But he's the guy who has like a history and has been charged with assault before, and
right.
so he was an easy mark.
And so she drops this gun in like across the street from his house, basically.
Yeah,
and then And then they never actually think it's him. They bring him in for questioning, just to make it look like he's in trouble, basically. So in case that
his neighbors notice the cops taking him in, and then it gets back to her, and it's all a play at this point. There's a lot of that pretend in this episode, but so because Columbo already did that once with Brady, it's kind of the tip off that like they are play acting this thing for her benefit, and then after that we get the funeral as
we finally get to the actual funeral. Yes, we catch up, and Columbo starts wandering away, Vivian comes up to him and says, "Hey, I know you're grieving." He's like, "Hey, can we go? I just want to go home. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I just want to go home. Can you drive me home and then we'll like just talk or
yeah?" He's like, "You understand what I'm going through. I need to talk. I need to not be around people. Can you just take me? Let's just go to my home." And
And so they go home, and Columbo's like, "What am I doing? I haven't even eaten anything. Oh, I'm so sad. I don't eat anything." And he starts making himself breakfast.
Asks, and she's like, "Nope." Yeah. And he makes like eggs.
He makes it so fucking fast.
I know.
Like, it's impossible how fast he makes it. Like, I know that Columbo has like cooked food in real time before, and like we've sort of, made a little hay out of that. But like, this is the opposite. He like walks in and then he like gets out a pan and like sort of pokes a spatula at it for a second, and then later
he cracks one egg
and
pours some coffee, and then he just brings over the finished eggs and sits down with toast. I mean, I think he does put the toast in the toaster while he's talking, but it happens very quickly.
But it doesn't, like, it's not like he puts the toast in the toaster, waits, a minute and a half, and then he, like, puts the toast in the toaster and then, like, walks to the table with toast. He basically does like, a cooking show. Here's one we prepared earlier, and just walks straight over with the lunch. Ready to go.
But so he does this whole thing and is talking to her, and then obviously puts the marmalade on his toast.
Table. Yep.
And eats that.
Yep.
And then continues to pretend like, "Oh, it's really getting warm in here." And then he's had someone call the phone, so he gets to go answer the phone, discover, wait, she's been poisoned, and then he continues to kind of play act to lure Vivian into, gloating,
she gives him this little speech. This is a portion of it.
Yeah.
This is the last little bit of it.
Is this some kind of confession? You're forgetting. I'm still a police officer.
But you won't be for long. In a little while, the phone is going to ring, and it'll be your friend Benny again with some more information from the coroner's office.
Benny.
Only this time, you won't be able to answer the phone, Columbo, because you'll be dead. Lying right here on your kitchen floor.
I don't think so, ma'am. You see, this is not my kitchen floor.
Dramatic. That's the dramatic "This is not my kitchen floor" theme, which of course familiar to
This is not my kitchen. Yeah, this is Brady's kitchen, which is like, you still probably should have just like rented a place instead of taking her to a different cop's home.
Yeah, it turns out that he would have done it at home, but Mrs. Columbo has the flu and he didn't want to bother her. So once again we're cheated out of a peek into Columbo's home life.
That's for the best. I don't think we want to see what filth he lives in.
He just lives in a hole.
Yeah.
Not even like a hobbit hole, just a regular hole.
Yeah. I mean, Mrs. Columbo doesn't, but he does.
No, but he does. She digs. He's the only thing that she's planted in the ground that hasn't died. So it turns out that he's not dying. He isn't even in his own house. This isn't a picture of his wife.
His wife is at home with the flu. She's not eating the poisoned marmalade.
This is not my underwear. These are not my suspenders.
Right.
The house
is bugged. Yeah.
Not even the house is bugged.
Yeah.
Brady is in like two rooms away with
two rooms over with a handheld tape recorder. I know.
It's like, Brady, could you not mic this room? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what?
You live here. Why wouldn't you, like, just a little bit?
Yeah, you know, you hear they're coming, like, just walk into the, like, drop the tape recorder behind, like, a cookie jar and walk out of the room. Like, I don't know why. I don't know why he's in a different room. I'm sure when they play that tape back later, they're just going to hear Brady breathing. And, like, that's, you know, like, the decisive evidence is just...
Yeah, I think it was just the, like, if he just waggles the tape recorder at the screen, we all go, oh, of course, oh, of course they were recording her. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They did have mics planted. It just was wireless and you couldn't see it.
Right. But I mean, yeah, like, minor, like, TV movie quibbles aside, like, it's a real, it's a real solid episode for kind of taking a swing at the formula.
You kind of know, like, from the moment, you find out that they know... that she's trying to kill Mrs. Like, you know exactly what's going to happen. It's not a surprise at the end by any stretch of the imagination.
And it doesn't, I mean, in fairness, I want to say it's maybe like 30 to 40 minutes tops before it's very clear that Columbo is not only suspicious of her, but is suspicious in enough of a manner that he's not going to just let anything get to Mrs. Columbo.
Well, that clip that I played of the dentist part, that's at the 47-minute mark. So about halfway,
there you go.
that's when it turns the corner into a full-on, into a cat and mouse. But who's the cat? Aha!
Right. Well, it's literally like basically after that point, it just starts creeping towards the, I'm just waiting for the, like, you know, Ocean's 11 style, like, flashback inside of what just happened so that we see the secret trick, you know, like that
quite
level
that.
Of...
It doesn't quite get quite that level of...
No, and thank God, because I think that would be a little too much for this, but it does, it just, like, it kind of creeps towards it a little, but again, it's a good... It's a good twist on the regular formula,
a fun
especially for a guy who's written quite a few episodes
that's
and some
true.
Really solid ones.
One new fun addition to the world of Columbo is, I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that this is the first appearance of squibs. This is the first time we see a shot land in Columbo. Like, previously, we've seen people get shot, and they just sort of do the cowboy wince and fall over. But we see the shirt explode this time.
Is this the first murder by gun?
No.
In the 80s, 90s?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I'm going to go.
We've only done a couple, so
it's
worth looking. But you're right. It's the first, like, 100% on camera, like, a couple of squibs. And honestly, after she shot him and went over to his corpse on the floor and put the gun on his chest, I kind of thought she was going to shoot him one more time just because.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't, but yeah, it was one of those things where it kind of read that way. Like, it was,
No.
She was very mad is what I'm saying.
This is not by any stretch of the imagination. So we had Sex and the Married Detective, Gun. Was Grand
Tiny Gun.
Grand Deceptions was not a gun. Agenda for Murder, the one we just watched, that was a gun one. Shot him in the head.
Oh, right.
Right.
How did we...
I don't know, because
it's been a while since we recorded that one.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks at this point. But
Longer than usual.
Longer than usual. But this is not the first gun. This might be the first, like, shot at a distance in this sort of, you know, in a well-lit room, like that kind of murder. But this is a fun... We're catching up to modern sort of modern techniques of filmmaking. Now you can see the bullets. We've relaxed the standards. The sensors have relaxed enough that you can actually shoot a person and have blood fly out of them. Hooray!
Right, which adds so much to the. No, I mean it's fine.
It's
whatever.
Fine.
It's but yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a departure from the first few episodes where. It was all bloodless and magical.
I feel like this episode, there's not a lot to say about clothes, but I'm excited to hear about it.
Well, I mean, I didn't write a ton down about it because there's not a lot of, like, really great stuff. Like, there's a... there's a guy working in the real estate office. I think he was like a photographer or something. And he's wearing like a huge oversized safari jacket, and the sleeves on the shirt he's wearing under it are rolled up. And it just,
yeah, that's, it's, we see it's this got guy that, arguing with Charlie, when, yeah, yeah, about the photographs. And, he's taking bad photographs of a mansion.
Right. And it's a bad, like, it's late 80s, early 90s kind of like oversized fit that, yeah, like you see it immediately and you're like, it's not that that safari jacket's wrong, but it's enormous and it looks so ridiculous. And there's definitely some of that. Brady's a great example.
It doesn't look ridiculous for the 1990s, though. It is worth noting.
Well,
it looks ridiculous by modern standards.
Right. I mean, in the same way that like the not Playboy episode, like, was certainly cribbing from what was fashionable, you know, in those circles at the time. Like, it doesn't look great now, but at the time people were into it. Yeah. But Brady's fits aren't great, but I love the fabric on all his jackets. Like, one of the first times we see him is like a brown herringbone tweed, and then he's wearing like, I think, a button-down collar, like chambray shirt under it with his tie, and he's generally always wearing something that is like tweedy or herringbone or something, and they also are kind of big on him. But yeah, there's not like anybody that was like, oh, you dress great. Like, I made a note of Ian McShane's uncomfortable mullet.
I mean, that's his Lovejoy's mullet. That's his 1990s mullet.
That's just of the era.
That's just what he was working with at the time. He's still a handsome man.
Yeah, I know. Even in his sort of craggy, you know,
he has always looked like he is the age he is now. Like, he's never not looked like that.
Honestly, like, I heard his voice and I was like, that voice hasn't changed. And then I was like, oh yeah, it's Mr. Wednesday. It's Odin from American Gods. It's just, yeah. Yeah. But yeah,
I'm happy to be living in the McShane-essence. You know, he's back. Yeah. He's back. I'm glad.
Well, I just wish that show was
better. Yeah.
The first season was all right, but it's, anyway, we don't have to talk about that.
As with Columbo, it's bad when your entire creative team just sort of changes from season to season. It doesn't, quality
that's
changes.
That's usually not a great sign. It's a worse sign when you remove the interesting people of color characters from the show. And it's worse when you go, oh, don't worry, we're going to have more people of color. And then the guy you're going to have handling the writing for all that is like a white guy in like his 50s or 60s.
Well, Columbo has almost never had an interesting person of color on it, so it's not really been a problem.
Yeah, I know. I'm not excusing it.
Yeah.
Ian McShane's mullet. The only other thing I wrote down was Charlie wears a blazer in those early scenes before, you know, he is murdered. Looks like it is a checked pattern from a distance, and I think it is in that kind of large resolve. But up close,
looks like burlap.
yeah, a little. Well, it's like I described it as like chain mail, but part of that is because what I think it is I think it's like a chunky weave silk blazer,
right?
And then it has that resolve of like from a distance, you can clearly see that sort of check pattern, but it's really. It's almost like a shadow plaid or shadow check. Like, it's a very subtle pattern.
It's not. I feel like when you get up close to it, it falls apart and looks very poor.
You're not wrong. Like, because it's shiny. It's a lot of things. Like, I'm not saying that. I think it's good. I think it's interesting.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, let me be clear on that. But yeah, I didn't write down a ton of outfits because there wasn't a lot.
That's not the notable thing in this episode.
Yeah, it's just not the thing that we're fixated on.
Right. True. True enough.
I enjoyed the episode more than I thought I was going to, especially after like how it opens.
Yeah. It's a better episode than it seems like it should have any right to be, and I have to assume that that's a lot of that is due to Helen Shaver's performance and Peter S. Fisher's writing.
Peter Fisher's writing. Yeah, no, I think you're right, because I definitely would say get past that intro and just get stuck into it, because
just kind of relax and enjoy, really.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think it picks up fine after you get past the intro that just drops you like into the funeral, and then you watch her like smirk and kind of have to do all this stuff while she is, you know, having her inner monologue, which she does a great job of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun episode. I definitely enjoyed it, and I recommend people watch it.
Yeah. And then after you watch it, you can go watch Helen also be in Starship Invasions with Christopher Lee and Robert Vaughn.
Is that part of her
work as well? She was also in that film. So congrats to all of those people for being in such a stinker.
Well, it's unlike Christopher Lee to be in a bad movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the good news is at least you know the Riff Tracks guys have got it covered.
Yeah. He was in a couple good ones, and hey, I love Christopher Lee. He's always the best thing in whatever he's in. You know, so you can say that.
He was also pretty great in, wasn't he in Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver as a voice? I'm pretty sure he was. Not the lead character, but as an elder god or something.
It definitely sounds like something he would do. I have a pretty extensive video game, you know, encyclopedia. That one is not in it, unfortunately. I hear it's good.
Yeah, it was really good for its time. Just whatever they did with their casting and voiceover director, like, just knocked it out of the park.
I feel like we are definitely so far afield, it probably means that it's time to
close
this one out. If we're into Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver, something has gone wrong. It's time to hit that emergency eject button.
Yeah, get us out of here, Mac.
That's going to do it this week. That's going to do it this episode. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And this has been the Columboys. And, just one more thing, sir.
Yeah?
Well, that's how it started. And now, here I am at the end. But I can't leave until I ask Ben that one little thing. The thing that's been bothering me the entire episode. I just gotta have the answer or I'll never rest. But do I have the courage to ask? What if I don't like the answer? I can tell Ben's getting impatient. He's wondering, how long does this flashback bit go? Does it have an ending? The music's kind of coming to the crescendo, and so fortunately this bit has to end. Now I've got to ask that question. So, Ben, have you ever tried lemon marmalade?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
Are you going to send me some?
No, that's it.
Oh,
just a question. All right, man. See you later. Yep.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.
All right, let me go stop the recording.
Okay.